This is Mandy Lee, and you are listening to Let the Hate Flow Through You with Jeremy Shear and El Jordano Diablo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeremy Shear.
El Jordano Diablo.
And you're listening to Let the Hate Flow Through You, your weekly dose of audible hatred.
And this week we're focusing on something me and Jeremy are both very well versed in, opioids.
That's right. And joining us this week to talk to us about how much he hates opioids is comedian Kevin Ross. Kevin, how are you?
Great, great, guys. Glad to be here.
Thanks for coming on. So, Kevin.
Get out.
He's glad to be here. Get out.
So, Kev, why do you hate opioids?
Well, because they made me their bitch for so long and made me do some horrible, horrible things that I just can't, you know, I just cannot have any love for anything that evil.
Okay. How long are we talking?
I'd say started in 94.
94, so about 22 years.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Jordan, he's got 10 years on you.
He does. He does. I got 12 years experience.
Yeah, and I've got, oh, man. I think I first did them at a New Year's Eve party on Brown Street in Akron in 99. I want to say so. Yeah, about 17 years. So yeah. Okay. So now that we've vetted ourselves,
yes.
Here,
definitely.
Yeah. So you're donezo. What was the impetus for you to abandon a 22-year lifestyle in an instant?
Pretty much. I got busted in Georgia.
Okay.
And it wasn't even for, well, see, at the time, I was selling mass quantities of Dilaudid, Roxycodones, you name it. I had these doctors that would write for me, and they were mine, and I had cop cars parked out in front of my house, but, you know, they could never get me on that.
Right.
And then I got into methamphetamines.
Okay.
And I got caught with 2 pounds of that.
Ooh,
yeah.
In Georgia. So they pretty much threw the book at me.
Sure.
Yeah, I was done.
2 pounds of fucking methamphetamine.
Yeah.
That's not fucking around.
No, no. I was like living in a house with like 3 dealers, and I kind of got sucked into it all because I was against like that type of high. Mm. So, and I would just sell my pills all in one day to one person usually. You know, 5-10 grand in one day, and I was good. And then I lived in this house with all these people selling meth, 3 doors. You could, you know, and it was a constant. Harley's pulling in, pulling out at 4 in the morning. And then, like, they'd run out, and I knew people, and then I'd set up. And just got sucked into it.
Yeah, so it sounds like you were selling most of your drugs. So where was your use coming from if you weren't doing your drugs?
I had enough drugs. Trust me, I was getting like 120 Roxycodones, 120 Dilaudid, and then not to mention
can you get the number of that doctor?
Yeah, and you know, I would be remiss if I didn't point out every one of these doctors that I went to were all Middle Eastern.
Really?
Yes. It was almost as if they were killing us, letting us kill ourselves. I'll never forget when one of them said to me, they said, sign this and you sign your soul away. I go, well, I can't because my soul is already in the pawn shop. And he thought that was funny, but it actually practically was.
Yeah. So it's So you weren't going for like pain management or anything. You basically just found these guys that would just write you these scripts.
Well, yeah, and it all pretty much started. I was in a really bad car wreck. And,
okay. That's usually where it starts.
I see a parallel here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at one point, the neurologist was giving me literally 200 milligrams of methadone a day. That's more than most clinics will ever even give you. They'll give you maybe 100.
So they went, you got in a car wreck and they gave you methadone instead of...
Well, eventually.
Okay.
Eventually,
right,
we worked into that. And then I was getting 610 milligram methadone pills a month.
There's no way they would prescribe that much.
Yes,
now.
They did.
No, I mean,
oh,
like
now.
With all
no,
the
they don't
laws
even,
and
they
shit.
They won't even do
no.
hydrocodone.
No. You can't. I know that you can't go to your general practitioner. They're not allowed to give you more than 3 days supply now.
Right.
You have to go through a pain management doctor. I mean, I'm sure there's loopholes in every system. So.
And this was the state of Georgia, too.
Right. Which, I mean, is right above Florida, which is
right.
Fucking pill heaven. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I lived there, too.
Yeah.
so, but yeah, and I remember doing heroin out in California when I lived out there. And my wife at the time was Mexican, so I it was just anywhere I wanted it, and that was during my crack phase, and I smoked crack, and I would shoot heroin to come down.
Right, speedball
so,
shit.
Yeah.
So I've never, just to get it out there, I've never touched heroin. It's been put in front of me before, right. But I never once touched it. I just, and I know it's like such a fine line and such like a bullshit cop out is like, well, I never touched that, you know what I mean? Which
right.
And I've said to you before, like, had I touched heroin ever, I would have been dead already,
more than likely, because you know the deal is that it's, you don't know what you're getting anymore,
right?
Like, yeah. They've got record numbers dying right now.
Yeah
it's sick.
Everywhere. I mean, it's bad in the Midwest, but it's everywhere, too. Yeah. My cousin just OD'd and died in North Carolina.
Jesus.
6 months ago.
Jesus.
It's that fentanyl shit, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the danger. So you start, was the start of your drug use then when the doctor started prescribing you the pills after
that
the
accident?
That
was when I really got hooked.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I knew that the day would come that he would eventually...
right.
No more. I just dreaded that day. And it was like 5 years later, but I knew it was coming.
That's a hell of a run, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's
it
a
was.
Hell of a run.
It was. And I pushed the limits with this
sure,
guy.
Sure.
You know, always like I lost my script or I came up with like where he's like, I won't give you another one unless you have a police report. I'd call the cops over and say, hey, listen, I got my script ripped off. Give
one
me
of my
a
favorite
police.
Stories, I read Ace Frehley from Kiss, his memoir. In his memoir, I think I've told you this story before, as like this is back in like the 80s, I think. He was like, he had doctors where he would get them coke, so they would just prescribe him whatever he wanted. So he had this doctor who would prescribe him the Hycodan syrup. You
right.
know, like
oh,
the
yeah.
good shit.
Yeah.
And that was when they filled it in glass bottles. I guess they stopped doing that in like the early 90s. They stopped filling glass bottles. So what he did was he went and he was living in New York City at the time. And he went to the pharmacist to go fill it up. And it was like a huge, the biggest one day, you know, the fucking 55 gallon drum, you know.
Yeah.
But no, so I guess he gets this filled up. He had an old one. So he goes outside around the corner in the alleyway. Pours the new one in the old one, smashes the new one, runs back into the fucking pharmacy and goes, a cab driver just almost ran me over and I dropped it. And they filled them up with new. That shit wouldn't fly now.
No. But the dope fiend moves are just.
I could. All the dumb, bad, horrible shit I've done throughout the years. I know, I mean, granted, I've been a, you know, generally good person. I haven't let it control my life in a really long time. But like. All the bad shit that I did to get fucking high, man. Not to get money, just to get high.
Yeah.
Just fucking blows my mind. Like, I look back, I'm like, what a scumbag, dude.
Yeah. I'm right there with you.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It was real easy for me to quit. I wish I could explain it better, but we'll get to that point. So you've got the car accident happen to you.
Right.
You've got 5 years on a painkiller run.
Right.
Were you just ramping everything up at that point?
Oh, yeah. Like, I would go every time I went to see that doctor, I would tell him, I think I'm building up a tolerance. We need to up this. And,
okay.
And my buddy waiting out in the car, he'd just flip out like, how do you keep doing this?
Yeah.
And and then eventually it got cut off, and then I ended up getting on the methadone clinic.
Okay.
And then I found another, you know, you find really quality people at the methadone clinic. Yeah. Yeah. So.
I mean, that's the target market, so.
Yes. Eventually, I started getting more pills again. I met this old lady, and she was wired into the whole thing. Granny Pat was her name, and she pretty much wired me into every single pain management that was putting out. And I was going to several. So, and because, you know, I'm disabled, I got a free pass just automatic.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're disabled. Okay.
Yeah.
So was it the car accident that gave you the disability or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got bulging discs in my neck, but, you know, all those opiates, man.
Yeah.
I was doing them to get high and to get well. Eventually, that's what it came down to, was just to get well.
Yeah. So what point was, did it become just getting well?
Oh, that was probably, not that long, like a few years. I mean, after you're doing it every single day, and then you miss a couple days, it's the flu times 1,010.
Yeah, withdrawals
I like
are
to
no
think of
fucking
it as
fun.
The worst hangover you've ever had.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing worse. I remember when I very first had, when he cut me off of the methadone. And I remember sitting on, or just laying on the couch for damn near 2 weeks and just throwing up constantly. No matter what I put in my mouth, it would come back up. Water, anything. Mm-hmm. My throat was so sore just from throwing up constantly. And then I was ready to just kill myself and run and jump in front of this train because we had train tracks behind me. And if it wasn't for my buddy, God rest his soul, he's dead now, but he stopped me from jumping in front of that train. I was that, like, to that point.
Yeah. So you get to that point, but you go right back on the drugs.
Yep. It took me a while.
What's the attraction?
I don't know. I think it's the escape. I think it's like you could be sitting in a snowstorm on a curb, you know, and naked, and if you're high enough, you'll think you're on the beach in Waikiki Beach.
You don't give a fuck.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it came from just, I went through a divorce.
Right.
And it's just, I think most addictions come from sadness and despair. If you're happy and you're good with your life, you're not out getting high and messed up. They've done studies about that. I don't know, but.
Yeah, so you're still at that point in your life where you need the escape.
Right.
So you just ramp it up again. And when did you start selling?
That's when I ran into that old lady, Granny Pat. And
let's call her Granny Goodness.
Granny Goodness.
God, but there were some. They didn't live in a house or anything. They lived in trap motels in Atlanta.
For fuck's sake!
In Atlanta, these were the motels that if you end up at, and you're not there to get drugs or
I bought drugs from those kind of places before, man.
Yeah, you pity the people that just, you know, vacationers.
I mean, it's just funny to walk in there, and it's like, you're going there for the same fucking reason they're there.
Yeah.
And you're like, God, look at all these shit bags. And what are you doing? Your pill dealer is cutting up heroin in front of you. And I'm like, what am I doing here? Yeah. Why is there no windows in this place? Yeah,
exactly. And so anyways, it just, and she had like two sons and a grand, and they would all be in a giant pit bull, and they'd be all in one room.
Yeah.
And it was really, I went back and forth with her throughout quite a few years there. Because like if one doctor fell through, I'd go back to Granny and hey, and then she would end up buying a lot of my pills too.
Right.
And I can just imagine she's got to be dead by now. There's just no question.
Well, was she using too?
Oh yeah, okay. Bad. I mean, she would shoot up in her neck. She had no veins left. She was like 70 years old. One of the oldest junkies I've ever seen. And then JR, her son, was just a dangerous redneck. I mean, seriously, and his dog, giant pit bull. And I remember one time, Granny and I were in the bathroom divvying up the Dilaudids. And he and myself and JR had gotten in a little tiff over a woman because she was living at my house. So I came out and he came at me like there was nowhere to run. Okay. I was stuck right there with the mirror behind me. And he just kept coming at me and I would kick straight out at him. And then he would bounce back and come back at me again. And I'd kick him again. And he'd be like, stop kicking me. And I'm like, stop coming at me. Yeah. Right? And then the dog got involved. And rah, 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 rah. And I ended up on the bottom of this pile of people. And I came out of it with just like a little like nick on my arm. I don't even know. But I'm bleeding from the arm. And I walk out. I check my pockets. I got like $2,000. My pills. I'm good to go. And I'm out.
Right.
And probably a month later, I was back there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how it works.
Yeah.
What do you remember most about that time in your life? Is it just your life revolved around going to get drugs, or were there other things going on?
No, that was it, man. That was it. It was...
it was controlling your entire
that's
life.
That's it. You woke up. Like, you had to... Yeah, you... In fact, I used to not like to go to sleep because I knew if I didn't have something for the morning...
Right.
It was going to be bad. So, and it was just revolved constantly around that and paranoia. Just the paranoia of at any moment, you're going to jail for a long, long
time. Yeah, that's what always has always scared me about it. Is like there's always that thing because, like, I've now had my brush with the law, and it was a DUI.
Right.
But I've had my brush with the law, right. And I did 3 days. I didn't like it. I never want to go back. I don't fucking want to go back. I'm too pretty for jail. And that's a joke for anybody who knows what I look like. And
no, you've got very fuckable lips.
Oh, you would know.
Yeah.
But no, I like, it's just, what was I saying? Shit, I'm sorry.
About jail.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I just like, yeah. I've like the penalties, if you get caught with one that's right, not prescribed right. to you, you're going to jail right. for 2 years. Right. They don't care. They don't give a
right.
fuck.
Right.
Or they want to know where you got it, and then you got to flip on somebody, right. which I ain't going to do that.
No. So. When I got busted with all the meth, they went in the trunk and found Xanax that weren't mine and a bunch of stuff. But and the people that I was selling for, there was not even a question. I could not tell on anybody. This was the Mexican mafia, and they...
You're dead.
They knew, well, that and my family, they knew where my daughter went to school.
Fuck.
They knew everything, so it wasn't an option. They tried to roll me, and I want to talk to my attorney. I want to talk to my attorney. Yeah.
Well, that's how you got to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Just for anybody listening, if you get in trouble, don't say anything. You want to talk to your attorney.
No snitching.
That's it.
Let the hate flow through you does not advocate snitching.
That's no, it. Not at all.
No.
If you're a snitch, let the hate flow through you at Gmail. No, I'm sorry. It's thehateflow@gmail.com. If you're a snitch, let us know.
Yeah.
Tell on yourself
immediately. We need to know.
That's one other thing, man, is like all the times I've told tons of people, I'm pretty open about this shit because like a lot of people know what I've done, what I've gone through, what I did to myself. Like I never dimed on a goddamn person. Like, right. And I couldn't tell you, I couldn't count on my hands and fingers,
right.
or my fingers and toes, two times over, maybe three, how many people I stole drugs from.
Yeah.
Like, you know, peeking in fucking medicine cabinets and fucking, I mean, like, because 12 years ago, like when I first got into it, that was right as it was before it got really, really popular. Cause it got really popular in like 2008, 2009. Like, So like, I remember when I first started, nobody really knew to check like, oh, hey, why are these gone? You know, like nobody knew. So it was like, it was just a free for all. And if I ever got questioned, I don't know what you're talking about. But like how I got started on it, I don't know if I've ever told you this before, but like how it started with me was We had gotten kicked out of our house because we had some shitty landlords, and my parents, my dad had broken his leg, so it was like we had to split the family up. My family moved in with my mom and dad's best friends, and that was in Cleveland, and I moved out to Akron with my grandparents. And I was like under a lot of stress, like, because it was closer for school for me to go there. So it was like I was under a lot of stress all the time, and I would get real bad headaches, like chronic headaches. So it would start off, my grandma would just be like, oh, well, here, take Tylenol. Well, that didn't work. And I didn't know, you know, none the wiser. So she'd give me, oh, here's a Vicodin, you know, for a headache. And right. And then
it'll stroke you.
I know. And then it's like, okay, so one, I was like, well, at least get rid of my headaches. And then if it was real bad, I'd take two. And I was like, that got good to me. I'm like, well, wait a second. This feels pretty good. What happens if I take three? I wonder what happens if I snort these. Fucking 4 months later, I'm crushing up. I'll never forget this. My junior year of high school.
It's got to burn too, man.
That's, oh, with all that Tylenol? Yeah, no, man. I was an ignorant fucking kid at the time. Like, I didn't know any better.
Right.
So it was like, I'll never forget the one time, 11th grade, I crushed, before I went into school, I drank half a bottle of NyQuil, chugged a Monster. I was obviously dealing with fucking something. And I did that. And before I went in, I crushed up like six Vicodin. I just had a bag of powder that I took into school. Like, what the fuck I was thinking at the time, I had no idea. And then there was a brand new high school. So we went into the fucking bathroom, me and my buddy, and we put our notebooks on the ground in the bathroom, in the stalls. And we're just pouring lines of this shit out. Like, oh, my face is burning.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Just like ignorant, moronic kid shit, you know?
Yeah.
But that's how I got started doing it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't blame, obviously, I don't blame that on anybody else but myself. I mean, I've heard people like, oh, you could blame your grandma. I'm like, no, it ain't her fucking fault. No. She was trying to help her fucking grandson out.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it does have a therapeutic purpose.
Yeah.
Like, the big thing I was worried about as a kid is I had breast reduction surgery. And they give you this stuff before they put you under anesthesia that makes you feel really good. And I was like, doctor, I'm a 14-year-old kid. I don't know how drugs work. I'm worried that I'm going to get hooked on this because it makes me feel good. And he gave me this 5-minute-long lecture about how, no, this has a therapeutic purpose. You're not in a place where you're going to, like, I need more of this. This is accomplishing something. So don't worry about it. And I ended up singing Low by Cracker for like 3 minutes.
Low Cracker.
While they were wheeling me back to get my tits cut out. And that was the first time I did anything. But he was right. Like, I didn't like go out like immediately after and like, I need to do more of that. It wasn't until somebody gave me Vicodin at a party that it was like, all right, this is my deal now. And like, he was selling them to me for a buck a pill. So.
Oh, wow. God, that's the price.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, this was 1999.
So. Yeah, I mean, that was
nearly as good as free.
Yeah.
I mean, you ain't gonna find a fucking, what were the big pink ones called that sucked? Darvocet.
Darvocet.
That's not even a real drug in my fucking opinion.
It's not.
But like those things, like you'd be hard luck to find those for $1 a piece now. Like,
I always got those for free.
Well, I just mean like now with like people, like, I mean, dude, yeah, people for like tens. I've seen people charge $18 for a Percocet 10.
Jesus,
well, $18 fucking dollars, man.
Yeah, I believe it.
Well, it's I mean, now that heroin is so dangerous,
it's gonna go back to the pharmaceuticals probably.
But
they're so hard to get now.
No, but why do you, like, I've said this to a million people. Why do you think there's such a fucking heroin problem? They crack so hard down on prescription drugs, people started going to get heroin.
Right.
It's not that hard to figure out.
Right, it is.
It's the government's fault.
It is, but it's also, I think, an epidemic of sadness.
Sure.
In this, you know, society right now, how just youth is disillusioned and thinks that they're going to be on Star Search and make it or whatever instead of
or podcast or something stupid like that, you know,
some really dumb
but instead of going to college. But college now is so expensive that you're going to be in debt for the rest of your life. And so I get it, kind of like, my kid doesn't want to go to college. She's going to go to cosmetology school.
Good
and
for
I'm,
her.
I'm all for it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's an immediate job that she can go get.
And I know she's 17, she'll be 18, and I know that she smokes weed. And I know she knows all about the drugs. She knows all about the Xannies and the Molly and everything else. I can only pray to God because she has seen me at my worst.
Right.
You know, I don't think she has really grasped, because I was like the main caregiver for a long time, because I was home, mom was working. And with her, and like daddy would just fall asleep.
Right.
Oh, he's really tired. And it's because I was nodding out.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
How often were you high during that period? Was it just like all the time, or did you have your breaks where it was like, okay, I'm going to be a normal person?
No, there was no breaks.
No breaks?
No. I was in it, and I kind of got kept in it by my best friend because we were not good for each other. He, you know, would encourage me to get to, you know, if I had money, and if he had money, he'd encourage, you know, I'd encourage him.
So what were you doing for work while this was going on?
Well, I was getting that check.
Yeah.
And then selling the pills.
So that was it.
Yeah.
So you're just buried into that life.
Yeah. And that's like the beginning of the end of the marriage, too. Like, I remember being so sick, and my wife at the time just going, what? I just can't live like this. I don't, you know.
You can't blame her.
I know. Oh, I can't. I can't blame her at all. It's just that was my wife. The drugs were my wife. That's all I cared about.
Yeah. So your time in prison was the thing that like, okay, now I need to stop. So has life improved post-prison to the point where you don't think you're going to get a twinge of that sadness that you recognize and you know the cure for it?
I'll be honest with you. There is nothing that I can think of that would drive me to be that slave again. I know I have different coping skills now. I have people that I can call and talk to. That know exactly what I'm going through or what have you, that I didn't have before. And right. I don't surround myself with those kind of people.
Well,
anymore.
That's definitely like, you asked me on the way here, are you clean? I said, semi. I mean, like, it's like, I don't let it control my, like, at one point, at a couple points in my life, it was so bad.
Right.
That's all I thought about. It's like the only thing I wanted to do. And the best thing that I did was I cut. I know, granted, I have like one friend who, like, we still fuck around. We do it, you know, once every couple months, and we're good. Right. You know what right. I mean? But like, I cut all these people out of my life.
Which you have.
And my life
yeah.
got fucking better. You know yeah. what I mean? Like, it instantly just rocketed me into something else that, like, oh, okay, no, you can be a functioning human being.
Right.
And as long as you keep these people out of your life. And that was like, I don't know if I told you about this, Jeremy, but I met this dude one night and people have a sense. And I think you probably both know this, like, for drug users, like, people have a sense for it. I'm saying, I'm at Now That's Class one night,
yeah.
local Cleveland punk rock establishment.
Yeah.
And I'm there and I'm up at the bar, packed bar. And I'm up next to this older black dude. Hey man, what's going on? He just looks at me dead in the eyes and goes, pills? I was like, well, whoa, whoa, whoa. I was like, well, what do you mean? He's like, hey, man, I just got out of the hospital. This is one of those dudes that does the run where he gets hurt, goes to the hospital, finds a bar, finds an asshole like me, and sells him, makes a quick buck. And he's like, I got this whole bottle of Vic 7.5s. It was like 20 of them.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I have cash. How much you want? And he was like, for the whole bottle, $150. I was like, you can go fuck yourself. Come back when you have a better price. So I walk outside and go smoke a cigarette. He's like, all right, how about $80? I'm like, sold.
Sold.
Sold. And like, I made the mistake of giving that guy my number. For 3 months, dude, he called me every single week. Hey, man, I'm getting more.
Devil whispering in your ear.
And I was supposed to pick up from him a couple times.
Yeah.
It always fell through. After that, I blocked his fucking number. I'm like, I don't need this shit. You are a fucking cop magnet. I am out of this motherfucker.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, man. A good dealer knows that shit, and there's a wide variety of tactics they use, but a good dealer just wants all of your money and mm-hmm. does not give a shit about it. I mean, you've been in that situation where...
I've been in both ends of it.
I just when I was selling, I would never... And because of the fact that you always have to think about, if this person gets in trouble, what are they going to do?
Exactly.
Are they going to tell on me?
Yeah.
And I would usually read them the Riot Act, and I always had my buddy Brent with me. He was the nicest, sweetest guy in the world, but he looked wild and crazy. He was 6'3", crazy hair, just wild.
Like Chewbacca.
Right. He looked like a madman.
Yeah.
So he was the intimidation factor plus that. And I had collectors, actually, that would collect for me if there were problems. In fact, that's kind of how the meth thing went bad. A collector. A guy by the name of Chain Gang. Tough guy. Told on me. But, I always would try to get rid of everything to one person. Yes, I did not.
That was my rule, too.
Yeah,
have the door going open and shut and open and shut.
For those of you out there trying to get into the drug game, that's not where you make your money. Where you make the money is selling to individual people, because you can do the individual markup. And those people were always what, you know, would get me into trouble, because it was the upsell that always got me. It was like, well, you like this? Well, I've got this.
Right.
And it's cheaper. Because it's the friend price, and then you go in, and all of a sudden, you know, you're hitting that guy up every couple of days to re-up.
Drug dealers are a son of a bitch, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was the, like, when I was getting clean for the first time, it's happened a few times, but it was because, like, I was allowed to see my kid again. So I didn't tell her about, like, what drugs do to you, because, like, they teach you that shit in school. That's not the important bit. The important bit is that you're going out into this world and you're going to encounter these drug dealers, and they're going to pretend to be your friends, and they're not. So that was what I had to warn her about, is like, this is the kind of person that you're going to encounter that's going to try to welcome you into this world of drugs, and they just want your money. They don't give a shit about how you feel. So it's like, that's the important, that's the only thing I could pass on to her that I thought was of any use, because, you know.
That's good advice. That's really good advice. Because they don't care. They don't care. And, you know, and young kids now, I mean, and everybody's been there. That's all that you really care about is your friends, and that you think are your friends.
Yeah.
But in the real world, once you get to be a total adult, really, you're lucky to have 1, 2, maybe 3 good friends.
Yeah,
in your lifetime,
you'll have plenty of acquaintances. Right. But like, there's those. I mean, in my experience, like I used to have a lot more friends, but like I have like 5 people that I know I can go to at any point, and they have my back because they've had the opportunity for the last 12 years to turn their back on me at multiple times. Yeah. Not one of them has.
Yeah, so. Here's the question then. You've got 3 really good friends. How many of those did you have to cut out in order to get clean?
All but one. All but one.
Now, did you find that when
one of them cut himself out because he's dead.
Yeah. Is it just the life, or was
the life. I think the system failed him. He literally went to the hospital multiple times telling him he was going to kill himself. And they didn't take him seriously. He would have to say, I'm going to throw this through the plate glass window. Then they'd lock him up for a few days.
Yeah.
And then he got put in an institution. Then he got out. And then he OD'd over at his sister's house right after he got a check. And she robbed him of every bit of money that he had in his pockets while he was dead.
Ugh. That's
the worst.
Yeah,
that's fucking awful.
I mean, it's something you should keep in mind if you're gonna go out and do this shit. Is if you need help from the hospital, there is no longer like you have to be locked up to detox. That's no longer part of EMTALA. they stabilize you and get you the fuck out of there as soon as possible.
That's it.
The only time you get a bed is if you're detoxing off alcohol. If you're detoxing off heroin, they don't give a shit. No. So they just get you stabilized and they get you out. And if you're on heroin and you want to get any sort of mental health help, they're going to tell you to go fuck yourself.
The system will fail you. I cannot say enough how much the system will fail you.
Yeah.
Unless you are diligent about finding some sort of therapist, whatever you've got to do to get your mind right, because, and you do, like I had to do a whole, like I moved completely away from everybody and everything, cut everybody out, and it made it easier because having those people around, plus, I mean, I'm not allowed back in the state of Georgia. Right. I have been banished. They said it in open court. You are banished from the state of Georgia. What? And this guy's like, what the fuck did you do?
Like, you know what? Good fucking riddance.
I know. Yeah. Fuck good Georgia. Fucking riddance. Fuck you, Georgia.
But no, it's like what you were just saying, like about like cutting people out and everything. It's just like the, what I was thinking about is just like this, the last dealer that I dealt with, like a guy that like I got hooked up with some friends from work, you know, whatever. This dude, he's just this hardcore junkie, you know, but he gave me a decent price on like tens. So it was like, all right, cool. I'd drive him around, you know, but like, I wasn't driving him around and we weren't fucking friends. Like he thought we were friends. We're not friends, dude. I'm picking this shit up from you and you're making me sit out like a sore fucking thumb while you go run to somebody. We met at a gas station, or I'd drive him to a gas station. He'd get in somebody else's car. I had to sit there on the corner of fucking like, what's that street? Like,
heroin.
right.
Methadone.
And like, him and his buddy go run down to this dude's house. I'm like, why the fuck are we dealing with this dude? Like, why don't we just go to that guy's house if you know where he lives? It doesn't make any sense. But the one time, you'll love, this is the best. So, you know the shitbag apartments that we passed on the way here, right on Chevy?
Yeah.
He lived in those, but he was staying with a woman. Now, this dude's like my age, like 30. He's staying with a woman who's like 65.
Granny!
And has a, and has a, is a mental deficient. Like,
Granny.
she gets money from the state, you know what I mean, kind of thing.
Right.
So, yeah, and so he's staying with her. So this one time, he wasn't supposed to be staying there, and I was supposed to go pick up from him. He's like, well, I'm here. I'm like, you're not even supposed to be there, dude. They just booted your ass. He's like, I know. He's like, but her sister's here, and if she knows I'm here, I'm fucked. I was like, well, I'm on the clock right now. I need to come pick these up because it's right across the street from where I work.
Jesus.
And so I was like, I need to go.
Yeah.
And he was like, all right. And I was like, why are you talking all quietly? I'm hiding in the closet.
Oh,
right.
Jesus.
Oh, my God. So this is broad daylight. I'm talking like 4 o'clock, right? So I pull up and I was like, I call him like, where the fuck are you? He's like, come up to the window. So I see the door open just slowly and it starts creaking and I see him stop it. And so he gets out. He fucking takes an exit. This is broad daylight where there's cameras everywhere. I'm walking on the tree lawn to this thing. He cuts a hole in the screen of not his apartment and fucking shoves a bag of pills, yellow fucking like 100 Vite 10s, shoves them through the window. He goes, you got the money? And I just fucking pulled it out. I counted it really quick, just like to be an asshole. Took 20 and was like, I'm keeping this for this. And just threw it in the fucking hole.
Jesus.
And it was just like, dude, you got to be fucking kidding me, man.
This is,
and that was like a reality check for me. Yeah. I was like, if there was a cop, I would have been popped and I would have been fucking in prison.
Right.
Yeah. Fuck that.
Yeah. But it's not just about cutting the dealers out of your life. It's
the negative influences that you know that you're going to end up coming up with some bad ideas with, you know, you know, those people,
I know those people
and that'll go along with you. And you see,
like, yeah, this is a good idea, right? Yeah, this is a great idea.
I think, hey, listen, I did a lot of,
I mean,
of
you got money, right? I got money.
And, yeah. These bad ideas get hatched and you know that they're bad and you need to cut it away. It really is. You know, my parents used to say, you know, you're going to be judged by the people that you hang around with. And I just never used to listen to him. Like, I like
guilty
that
by
dude.
Association.
He's a good guy, man. I don't care what you say about him. But really, you know, hanging around good people is so much better than hanging around with bad people. People that are in the drug world, people that are constantly just fucking up.
Well, you know what it says in the Bible? Bad association spoils useful habits.
There you go.
I did not know that.
Bad association also gives into really bad habits, and it's a lot of fun sometimes. Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not just the bad people, though. There are just people in your life that in order to deal with them, you got to be fucked up.
Agreed.
And those people have to go, too.
Yeah.
Cut 100%.
Them out. Cut them out. Get away from them. And stay away.
When you cut poison out of your life, like a person, there's no better feeling. Yeah. You might be heartbroken because you love that person, but like to be free of that type of thing.
Well, I just cut loose. I'll be honest. I feel bad, and I'm kind of missing her. But she's a stone cold alcoholic that I just cut loose, and I really really liked her a lot. She was really funny. She was fun, but. Meanwhile, I take her to my dad's house while he's out of town, and he lives in this unbelievable house, and she's about to piss on the floor. Oh. You know, hey, listen, this, you know, you never know what she's going to do when she's all fucked up. Yeah. So,
it's a wild card.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, yeah, it's just I knew that I deserved better, but the pussy was good. And that's one of my addictions, you know.
One to have.
Yeah, it is, I'm going to be more selective this time. I really am. I'm not going to settle for an alcoholic.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, man. It's the same kind of deal. It doesn't matter how dirty the high is. It's the high.
Right.
So, like, at what point do you stop chasing the high?
Right.
Like, when do you get to that point where it's just like, that doesn't matter anymore?
I think everybody has their own bottom, whatever you want to call it, your bottom, whatever, where you just say to yourself, you know what? Fuck this. I can't do it anymore. I just cannot do it anymore.
That was me about a year ago when I had that fucking breakdown, man.
Yeah.
It was like I finally hit like...
That whatever it was, it might not even have been a major traumatic event. It might have just been steadily
fucked. It was so much piling up. Like, it was just so much piling up. And then I let a girl get to me, and that was the straw that broke the camel's back. And I just went into just a fucking 2-week bender of like epic proportions. I was barely working at the time, and I was finding ways to get as fucked up as I possibly, because I was in pain management, you know? Right. So I was like, I had that. Plus I worked at a bar where I drank goddamn nearly for free.
Right.
Yeah. So it was just like the combination of the two. And then like one night, I have no idea, because I was getting prescribed 160 Oxy fives a month, or 180 a month.
Yeah.
And like there was just one, I had gotten my prescription like 3 days before.
Right.
And they were fucking, this one night I just kept going, and I wasn't trying to kill myself, but I had this fucking like realization moment where I was like, oh shit, I'm like, I'm gonna die if I keep doing this
going?
Right now.
Where is this gonna end up?
Yeah, so I called my one friend. I was like, you gotta come take these from me. Like, get money for them. Just get them out of my fucking house, dude.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's like, that was like it, you know? It was like, that was like when I was like, all right, time to fucking take a step back and figure out who I actually am.
Yeah.
All right. So, what, you know, it wasn't jail.
Well, see, I went to prison for 8 years in California because I tried to rob a cocaine dealer in the early 80s. That was the beginning. Like, I've been in drugs since, you know, my teens. But that wasn't, you know, enough. Prison wasn't enough. But I think it was just the turmoil and this last run-in that really woke me up, because I have that on my record, all this serious shit that's on my record from California.
Right.
And they were looking at that, and they were like, it might have been 30 years ago, but we don't care.
Right.
We're going to hang you. And then went through the process with the attorneys and got 1,000 years worth of probation and kicked out of Georgia. But that really was the ultimate wake up for me. It was just like, do you want to be locked up? Because I actually, I can, like I got a DUI here and I had to do 10 days down at Cleveland. Granted, I can adapt to pretty much anything.
Mm-hmm.
Do I want to? No, I don't want to. It's not cool. I you know, like when you're institutionalized, like when I did all those years, I got out and there was a period of my time that I went through that I was thinking, you know, it'd be easier locked up than this bullshit because I was homeless and I was, you know.
Yeah.
So, no, that was the straw that broke the camel's back was that last run-in and looking at all that time. And God, that's the only answer I've got because I prayed and I prayed and I prayed. And I think getting busted was part of the ultimate plan. Because I couldn't do it myself. I would lay it in bed just going, just get me out of this. Please, just I don't want this anymore. And I don't know how to stop. And I'm living in a house full of junkies and people coming and going. And I just didn't know where else to go. I didn't know what to do. And next thing you know, I mean, and I was pimping. I was a pimp for a little while. I had these whores. And granted, they weren't your Marriott whores. They were the Motel 6 nasty variety. And yeah, and it was just a horrible life that I knew that I didn't belong there and I wanted out.
So it became to where you couldn't get out. So you asked for help from the Invisible Man.
And right.
What was the answer that you got?
The answer that I got was you can either be in jail forever or free and happy.
Okay. So what's the, you know, your situation is still like...
Oh, it's precarious.
Yeah.
I do have addiction, I would say behaviors that I fall, like the pussy. Yeah. I fall into that category. Like I make bad decisions behind it all the time. And, you know, I'm 53 and I'm still making horrible decisions behind women. But I'm trying to step that up and be a little more picky. And, yeah, and really keep things in perspective. And I just became a homeowner.
Okay.
And I got a bunch of work to do on the house. That's a huge thing for me. I've always wanted to be a homeowner. Never was. Always rented, got apartment, whatever. And finally, like, I mowed my lawn. I used to hate mowing lawns because it was somebody else's.
Yeah,
I did my own the other day, and it was actually kind of nice.
Therapeutic. Yeah.
It was.
Well, yeah, now you have something to occupy your time. As like, I mean, that's a big part of it. As like, you know, that's like, oh, I have work to do. If I'm busy fucking off doing other shit, you know, this ain't going to get done, and I own this. Like, this is mine, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So is it it's a new routine?
Yeah, it is.
It's
and the success is almost scaring me. It is because I'm waiting for that. Oh, I'm the
same kind of person. Where I'm like, this is going too good. Go,
yeah, exactly.
Like you told me that the other night. It's like everything's going to go wrong.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, it was partly because I watched a sketch of Louis C.K. talking about how everything goes wrong, bad and sad eventually. Like you bring the puppy home, guess what? That fucker's going to die. So get ready for the sadness. So I kind of had that in my head when I said that the other day.
Yeah, but you know how to get to that that sadness again. Is it ever going to be worth it?
No way. I got so much to lose right now. I've got so much to lose right now that it'll never be worth it. And the disappointment that I would give to my family. My dad, like while I was in the midst of all these addictions, my family was in the state of Ohio here. They never saw me like that ever. So it was totally hidden. And now they've seen me normal.
Yeah.
And I would never want to let them see me like that or around people like that and fucked up. And it would kill my dad.
Yeah. So, you know, you're staying clean to maintain that image. Like you have your shit together. You can interact with your family in a normal way. You've, It pains me to say this, but your comedy career is going all right.
Oh. Well, Jeremy, thank you. That means a lot
coming from you. I know.
It is going all right. It really does. It is going all right. So, I mean, you know, you said that you still have a problem with pussy, but do you think that instead of chasing that high, just maintaining is the way to go?
Yeah, I do. I think that this last one kind of really put a lot of shit in perspective, because it didn't start off that I knew she was an alcoholic. She was a nurse and she was good. But then I found out and I still didn't care.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where, you know, and I didn't tell any of my family or friends because they had met her and they're like, oh, she's nice. And, you know, but I was hiding the fact after a while once I knew that she is a full-blown alcoholic.
Yeah.
And I know I deserve better.
Sure.
You know, I know I do. So hopefully, God willing, I'll get a nice, successful woman that I can be compatible with.
Yeah, but even if not, man, I mean, you have enough going on.
Yeah, I do. I do. So, and there's always lotion. There's always lotion and porn up.
Yeah, you can always sit on your hand, dude.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, Kev, thanks very much for joining us this week. We appreciate your story.
Thank you.
And we appreciate your hatred of opiates.
Well, I don't think that we'll ever find anybody who hates opiates as much as Kevin Ross.
Oh, I think we will. Before we get going, we need to give a shout out to Milky Way Recordings. That is where we are recording Let the Hate Flow Through You each and every week. For more information on their services, you can email milkywayrecordings@gmail.com. And our logo is designed, inspired, and produced by Sam Holmes. She is at Sam Holmes on the Instagram. Until next week. There is another. I won't apologize again. I'm a rampant offender. You can see right through my skin. I don't care.